Raghava, equity method in separate financial statements.
Good morning once again, and the purpose of this meeting is to give you a summary of the comments that we received on the exposure draft equity method in separate financial statements. We received 60 comment letters, and we see a strong support from respondents on the inclusion of the equity method as one of the options in Ind AS 27 to account for investments in subsidiaries, joint ventures, and associates. Some respondents who supported the proposal view equity method as one-line consolidation, essentially the countries where the local laws require equity method in separate financial statements. And for them, the characterization seems to be quite important. They emphasize the need to align equity method with consolidation procedures such that the profit or loss and the net assets in the consolidated financial statements and separate financial statements are the same. However, we think that it is not possible to align equity method with the consolidation procedures without amending Ind AS 28 or creating a new method for investments in subsidiaries, which aligns that method with the consolidation method, and that we think is outside the scope. And it's not possible without a fundamental assessment of equity method or the purpose of separate financial statements. And the respondents who disagreed with the proposal have essentially said that it's adding one more option to the two options which are already there in Ind AS 27, and they also said that without a fundamental assessment of the equity method or the purpose of separate financial statements, adding equity method as one of the options to Ind AS 27 does not make sense to them. However, on the question about the purpose of separate financial statements, we think that the principle that is there in paragraphs BC7 and BC10 of Ind AS 27, that the focus is on the performance of the investments as assets. So we think we should stick to that principle in making any changes from the proposals in the exposure draft. On the second question about transition, most of the respondents agreed with retrospective application of the proposed amendment, while some of them have requested the IASB to consider alternative methods, particularly citing reasons of entities which wouldn't prepare consolidated financial statements because they avail the exemption in IFRS 10 or in Ind AS 28, they wouldn't have applied equity method in the past. So they have requested the IASB to consider or give an alternative whereby they can use the aggregate of the carrying value of assets and liabilities of the subsidiary, either in its consolidated financial statements or in the consolidated financial statements of its parent, as the opening balance of the investment in subsidiary as a starting point, and then apply Ind AS 28 equity method going forward. They've also cited reasons about differences between equity method and consolidation procedures. For example, we've already highlighted recognition of impairment losses as one of the reasons for the difference. They've also cited other reasons like accounting for acquisition-related costs and reverse acquisitions or subsidiaries with net liability position, and said that because of those reasons, deriving the balance using the equity method retrospectively would be difficult to extract the information going back in time. So they have requested the IASB to provide an alternative method. On first time adoption, in the proposals we said that the amendments have to be applied retrospectively in accordance with the general requirements of IFRS 1. So most of the respondents did agree, but the respondents who disagreed and have said that a similar relief as to be given for existing preparers of IFRS should also be given to first-time adopters. On the fourth question about consequential amendments to Ind AS 28, paragraph 25, there has been a mixed response where some of them did agree with the consequential amendments because that aligns the accounting between consolidated financial statements and separate financial statements. But half of the respondents who responded on this question have disagreed with the amendment because they give reasons which are there in BC 10 that in separate financial statements, the investments are accounted for as equity investments. And so applying the principles of IFRS 10 in IAS 27 is not appropriate. There have been some other comments on the definition of separate financial statements, accounting for dividends, changes in ownership interests in the category of investee. First, on the definition of separate financial statements, respondents have raised a concern on the financial statements of an investor with no subsidiaries, but joint ventures and associates. So their mandatory financial statements in accordance with IAS 28 would probably be the same as their separate financial statements if they were to adopt or if they were to use equity method in their separate financial statements. So they see this confusion in the definition of separate financial statements, particularly for an investor in joint venture and associate without any subsidiaries. The only confusion they see is applicability of IFRS 12, which is the disclosures. So they are asking which takes a precedence. So even in the separate financial statements where associates and joint ventures are accounted for using equity method, should the disclosures in IFRS 12 be given in separate financial statements? And IFRS 12 excludes separate financial statements from its scope. On accounting for dividends, the respondents have highlighted an inconsistency because IFRS 9 requires dividends, which are essentially a recovery of capital, not to be recognized in profit or loss. So they've suggested that a cross-reference to IFRS 9 would be beneficial and remove that inconsistency. On changes in ownership interest resulting in changes in category, the respondents have essentially requested the IASB to provide explicit guidance on how should the retained interest be accounted for when there is a change in category from a subsidiary, let's say to an associate, and different methods of accounting are used. Let's say the subsidiary was accounted for using equity method and the associate at cost. So how should the retained interest in the associate be measured? So should the principles of IFRS 10 be applied and the retained interest be remeasured at fair value? Or similarly, when an associate becomes a subsidiary, so should the cost just be added to the carrying value of investment in associate, or again principles of IFRS 10 like fair valuing the pre-existing ownership interest needs to be done? So they've requested the IASB to provide explicit guidance on changes in the category, but we think that this is a facilitative amendment and complicating IAS 27 by providing guidance on what should be done when there is a change in the category of investment and different methods are accounted shouldn't be done. And some of the respondents did support that view that this is only a facilitative amendment and IAS 27 should not be complicated with all of that guidance in there. So over to you.
Sue. Thanks, Raghav. I just had one very specific point. This point that was raised on the accounting for dividends, yeah. I'd be very cautious about having this cross-reference to IFRS 9, or at least I think we should think very hard, because it's provided very specifically in the context of IFRS 9 because of the fact that we have a prohibition on recycling for equity investments measured at OCI. And so this specific reference to dividends was to prevent people describing something as a dividend that could be recognised in P&L, which was really a return of capital which otherwise wouldn't be able to be recycled. So it was sort of a preventing arbitrage. And that's very specific to the regime in IFRS 9, so I don't think that it would be applicable here. You might want to look at something about pre-acquisition dividends, that sort of stuff, but I don't think this cross-reference is relevant.
Philippe?
Just in a clarification, are we talking about an accounting policy election by the reporting entity to apply equity method to all investments that would qualify as equity accounted, or is it a case-by-case choice? If I have three associates, A, B, and C, can I say A is at cost, B is at equity accounting, and C at fair value, and I can then do permutations whenever I want, or?
The present requirements of IAS 27 are that a method has to be applied for all investments in a particular category.
So category would be all associates.
All associates, all joint ventures, or all subsidiaries.
So I could have, say, associates at equity method,
yep,
and joint ventures on a different basis.
That's those are the existing requirements of IAS 27.
I confirm that.
But we intend to bring an additional analysis on that aspect in the next board meeting.
All right.
Tricia. I have a lot of questions about the concerns that people raised, particularly these other amendments. For instance, the inconsistency in scope between 27 and 28, and I understand that this is to be a facilitative amendment, and so we didn't want to go to a lot of length to explain how to apply the equity method in separate financial statements, but it seems to me, I'm concerned that if we don't do something, these questions are just going to come to Interpretations Committee in a year's time. Did you give that any thought? Is there any way to not give a lot of guidance, but prevent this all from just ending up at Interpretations Committee in a year's time?
As of now, the thought process is that because this is only a facilitative amendment, and we are only referring to using the equity method procedures as described in IAS 28, the only consequence is that IAS 28 may have to be amended at several places to make it consistent with accounting for a subsidiary using the equity method. So as of now, thought is that it's only facilitative and we shouldn't get into it because it might mean again amendments to IAS 28.
Tak. Yes, I agree not giving a guidance because I don't think we can solve all these problems. So because it's a facilitative amendment, it's okay to me. However, there is one question, because this is choice we permit. What if some jurisdiction prohibited parent company to apply this amendment? So in that case, that jurisdiction is not really adopting IFRS. So this is not a technical question, but because there are lots of problems going forward, and we don't think we can solve it, and we are not going to provide good guidance, then it's totally depends on the discretion of the jurisdiction how to deal with it. In that case, if I was top of the security regulator, I would be tempted to prohibit to use the equity accounting for the separate financial statement, because separate financial statement used for variety of purposes, tax and dividend.
Yeah, I think it's could be quite the opposite as well, Taka. There are many jurisdictions that actually require equity. It's required by the regulator, required by the law, company law.
Yeah.
And in your case that you mentioned, I will bring it's when the IFRS has options and one jurisdiction prohibits, it's still IFRS compliant. And this is the case, for instance, in Brazil, where in many countries in Latin America, where revaluation is prohibited by law because of the experience they had during the hyperinflationary period and how companies used revaluation. So the revaluation option election in IAS 16 is simply prohibited, but they are IFRS compliant, so would be exactly the same.
Okay. Mary?
2 points. One is I am not supportive of moving away from retrospective application. In other words, I think we should continue to require it. While I can understand that there might be some problems going back, it's always going to be backstopped by IFRS 1 and the date of first time adoption of IFRS, because that guidance would apply. And I think because it is something that we are providing an option, not a requirement, in response to a number of jurisdictions that have said they want this, I think we should say retrospective. Second, I want to say I think we should not succumb to scope creep and try to answer the questions, you know, so consistent with staff recommendation and, about how to do the mechanics when your interest in an entity changes because of your level of ownership. I think it becomes more an accounting manual than a standard. So I would support not doing anything there.
Martin.
I have to say, when I read that, I was not so sure if you really should continue with that, because when there are so many open questions raised by people about the conceptual basis in a separate financial statement, we don't know where a separate financial really the purpose is, and we introduce this as an accounting choice, but really have a lot of open questions, which some of think I think were said here, but also only 60 people or 60 organizations have commented, and I would really see, okay, that many more questions will come, and that will, I think, in the maybe next 2, 3, 4 years, we will get a lot of questions how that is in individual situations applied, and then really we have big problems because we don't know what separate financial statements are for, and therefore I was not so sure if you really should continue with that, having read that paper. But I have not decided on that, but I have really good comments.
Gary?
I mean, I tend to think of separate company financial statements as something like parent company statements. It might be the ultimate parent or intermediate parents. Is that the right way to think of it? So what do they is done today then? Because we're making the alternative, I read it, I mean, presumably associates and joint ventures are on the equity method today, then you get to controlled subsidiaries. So what is actually done today in places where you can't do that? I mean, presumably you have non-IFRS statements, I presume. It seems to me then this is a good facilitating amendment. I think it answers a financial reporting need in jurisdictions. And you know, financial reporting needs are dictated by local regulations and laws, you know, more so than anything else, I believe. So I support where you're going on that. If anything, this morning, if anything, convinced me the need for an overall look at equity method accounting. I mean, I didn't have any doubts 3 hours ago. I have no doubts now.
I just want to make a point on that, though. The review of equity accounting is on the research agenda.
Yeah.
But we've got to be clear, particularly to the outside world, that it's not on our agenda. It's on the research agenda. And the aim of the research agenda is to address the issues, set out potential, perhaps, fixes, and then we make an agenda decision after the discussion.
You start by starting, you know. Yeah. With
so we mustn't raise people's expectations that this is going to be on our agenda, because that decision hasn't been made.
I understand. I mean, I'm not trying to.
No, I wasn't pointing to you in particular. It's just in general.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's obvious we should continue with this. I think it's almost impossible for us to back out of it. I think that there are a number of countries who are really upset with us since a long time because they cannot declare dividends and things like that. So we are, and it's based on that we don't accept our own principles. So I mean, you have a subsidiary and you have used IFRS, and we don't accept that information goes up to the holding company and mother company. So I think we should continue. We have some problems, but I mean, this thing is addressing something else than those problems.
All right.
Han?
Yes, Pat?
One observation. I agree with the staff recommendation. I think these are sound amendments. One suggestion that staff might consider to address the issue that Patricia raised, which also crossed my mind as I read the paper, and that is, if one were sitting down with a set of consolidated financial statements side by side with the parent company financial statements, known as separate financial statements in IFRS, one would expect to see the exact same net assets and the same net income for those two entities. At least I would. And so is it reasonable to say that the application of the equity method should essentially, in the separate financial statements, produce that outcome in order to deal with the potential for questions about how this should be applied?
As of
a question for the staff.
Yeah. So as of now, with the guidance in IAS 28, I don't think it is possible for arriving at that conclusion that consolidated financial statements will have the same result as in the separate financial statements if all the investments were accounted for using the equity method. Probably in a very simplistic scenario where it's 100% subsidiary, the answer might be the same. But if that's not the case, then there are certain differences between the two methods. The first and foremost being the impairment testing requirements in IAS 28. The impairment testing requirement itself creates a difference between consolidated financial statements and the separate financial statements, because in the separate financial statements, the investment itself is tested for impairment, I mean at the investment level, whereas in consolidated financial statements, the testing happens at the individual asset level. That's the difference which is right now there. And there are even other differences like accounting for acquisition-related costs. Some entities may have capitalized those costs in the separate financial statements, but in consolidated financial statements, they have to be expensed. And similarly, one other reason is a subsidiary which has a net liability position. So under the equity method, the investment carrying value cannot go negative. So in the consolidated financial statements, the subsidiary with a net liability position would be restricted to zero in the separate financial statements. That's one reason. And another reason could be capitalization of borrowing costs on assets of a subsidiary. Like if the borrowing costs are incurred by a parent or another group entity on the assets of a subsidiary, in the consolidated financial statements, those costs are capitalized and added to the carrying value of the assets of the subsidiary, whereas in equity method, we don't do that accounting. And so in the separate financial statements, the result would be different compared to consolidated financial statements.
Right. So in paragraph 49, you describe all those scenarios, which I think are critical. So the question becomes, you know, if somebody's looking at these financial statements and sees a different net equity, net position, and a different net income, it's going to be difficult to understand the value of those financial statements without an explanation of the difference in accounting policy. So I guess the question becomes, you know, is it incumbent upon the entity to make that clear, those differences in the numbers?
Although, Pat, if you put it in a cost, I'm not sure what additional information you're getting anyway. You don't get any of that disclosure. There's a huge discrepancy then between the cost and the net amount of the subsidiaries. So we're putting something that's more closely aligned. And in fact, if there are differences, it's actually potentially informative that you've got some differences that might push some inquiries.
This will most likely be the closest of the alternatives.
Okay, Raghava, thank you. We continue our deliberations at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, we have some.
Pat Finnegan.